Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 413. My name is James Gilmore. We're back after a one-week hiatus, and I'm joined by our very own Lady of the Lake, brackets of news, close brackets, Emily Soden.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
That's all right. You always say that, and you don't need to thank me. It's like there's no podcast without you, Em.
Oh, stop it.
And that noise right there, that's why we have you on.
Just for noises and things. Yeah, and the occasional painful stretch.
You could work for Amanita Design in their sound department. That noise is so interesting and quirky.
I could. And why do you bring that up?
Oh, well, it's topical. We'll be getting onto that in the news in just a moment. How's about that for linkage? You wouldn't know it's been 2 weeks where I haven't done anything. Yeah, we were, as advertised, away last week. I was off doing things in relation to, well, it's just a stag weekend, that's what it was, to be honest, and it was fun. I came back with almost all my body parts still in one piece, and I could remember my name and everything.
Unless you're not trying hard enough, James, you gotta go back and do it again.
It was quite tame compared to what it could have been. Although we were in Amsterdam, so it wasn't that tame. But
just chill.
Yeah, let's say that. Did you do anything fun while I was away?
We did work. We worked.
So no, then.
Basically.
All right. I would have invited you along, Em, but it's against the international rules, I think. You're not allowed to have lady persons, which is a bit wrong. Although, we could do that, but then I guess if I rocked up to Vivi's hen night, it would be a bit strange.
Kind of, yeah. See, this is the worst thing, because me and my friendship group, I'm friends with more boys than I am with girls.
Yeah.
And I've got a heavily male-dominated friendship group, so when one of them was getting married, they all buggered off to a stag do, and I was left alone.
Yeah, it kind of sucks, doesn't it? I think maybe they'll relax that sort of thing in future, now the gender divides are getting a little bit less stark, and people are a little bit more open to the ideas of, like, oh, just come along, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
it's just a party with your friends.
I must say, because if I had a hen do, like, if I ever get married and I had a hen do, I'd have, like, a couple of people come, and that'd be it, and that'd be sad. Like, apart from my female family.
It would just mean more booze for everybody, and if you like them the best, that's all that matters.
Exactly. I was saying, you know, if I could have male bridesmaids, I would.
I would totally rock that corsage thing. It would be super fun. I just invited myself into to be a bridesmaid at your wedding there.
So
hope you don't
fine.
Mind.
I'll have to get you some sleeveless dresses. You know, I don't think your shoulders are going to fit.
Oh, well, I'll squeeze in. Don't you worry. Well, because we were away for the week, we've got 2 weeks of stuff to cover. A little bit of news. We're talking Amanita Design and their new game, Churchill. We're going to let you know about a bit of Batman. And then new releases. We've got your Geostorm. FIFA 18's out and on the Switch. And it's maybe not as good as the other ports are. Stranger Things, the mobile game. What's that? Is it good? Yeah, it is quite good. Also, we have an interview with the guys behind Battlejack, which is an RPG which uses Blackjack as an attack mechanism thing, which is different. So look forward to that after the news. So long-time listeners will know that I'm a big fan of Amanita Design. These are the folks behind games like Machinarium, which was my introduction to them, and then I backtracked to things like Samorost, and then jumped forward to the likes of Botanicula. And there are all these very weird, quirky, point-and-click adventures done with a hand-drawn art style, very surreal. No dialogue, really, unless you count as dialogue. So everybody just chats nonsense. And it's just, they're really unlike, visually, any other point-and-click adventures. And just ridiculously charming. And I love them, and they're great. And there's a new one out. Well, on the way, at least. So Churchill is the name of it. We've got the first trailer, after a little bit of teasering from them. And I want it now. Because it's bonkers. You play this little acorn dude who is going around trying to... I can't even tell at this point, because it's just basically a vignette of loads of different weird goofy noises and comedy bits. But it's just all so lovely that I immediately want it, Em.
Well, hopefully you're not going to have to wait too long.
No, hopefully. If you haven't seen it, have you seen it? You should watch it if you haven't. It's well good.
I haven't seen it yet.
Ah,
I don't know why. I saw, to be fair, I saw a preview. Like, they tweeted this out earlier on in the week. They were like, oh, look out for this Thursday. We've got a thing coming.
Oh, okay.
So I saw a tiny bit. I've seen some GIFs and I like the look of it so far.
That's pretty much all it is. So yeah, if you've seen the GIFs and you know what you're in for. Chuchel's the name. We've got the trailer up on PG and a few more deets. So go there, have a look. It's not out until 2018, apparently. So it's quite a while to wait yet. But it will be iOS, Android and Steam. There's pretty much parity along the platforms at this point. So look forward to it. Talking of cross-platform releases, Batman The Enemy Within. We've now got the first two episodes which have appeared on iOS. Is it just iOS at the moment, Em?
No, it popped up on Android as well yesterday.
Oh, good. That's nice. So how far are we in on the consoles at this point? Because there's been a bit of a pause, a bit of a delay between the releases, isn't there?
Yeah, but with this thing, like, Telltale definitely did the right thing here. They did something similar last Christmas, obviously, with The Walking Dead, where they released the first two episodes to kind of really get you into it. Because obviously they've had some problem with the iOS release or with the mobile release. They've just decided to launch the two episodes in the same day, coinciding with episode two of Batman for PC and consoles. So they're all caught up
I
now.
I see. So now they're up to date. Because yes, I think they were struggling with the episode one release on mobile with the notoriously finicky engine that they have running it. Mm-hmm. You played the first one. Have you done the second one as well?
I haven't done the second one, but I've seen, like, I watched a stream of it, mainly because I have to be really good now with my money, so I can't afford the second one. So I just spoil it for myself.
You can kind of passively play those by watching it, because they are essentially just the interactive stories, so you can sort of watch someone else and get a quite good feel for what it's like to play it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And classically of Telltale, I mean, even if it kind of branches off more or less in the scheme of things in two directions and then ends up in the same area, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not surprising.
It doesn't matter. But there was some stuff that went down in that first episode, and now at the end, I need to watch the second episode, because, boy, Bruce Wayne is in trouble. I'm going to say that.
Oh, dear. Things aren't looking good for the Batman. Well, you can download the first episode, I believe, for free, and then you'll have to, obviously, buy the later episodes as and when they appear. So Batman The Enemy Within, currently available on iOS and Android right now. We've seen a lot of puzzle RPGs available on mobile, often attached to battle systems like Match 3 or light tap-based style combat. Battlejack throws fantastical creatures in your face and then asks you to defeat them by playing a kind of elemental blackjack. I'm joined by Battlejack's lead designer, Ari Kuaka.
Hello.
And lead artist, Antti Pesonen.
Hi, all.
Also, Moon Daewoong is the game's designer.
Yep, I'm here.
As I mentioned at the beginning there, you've got a fantasy RPG here where the main battle mechanic is based on the card game Blackjack, or 21, or whatever you want to call it. Out of all the card games that are out there, and we see poker most, Blackjack's possibly the one which relies on pure chance the most. There is an element of skill and the gambling thing of do I hit or do I stick with the 16, or, you know, I might go bust if I go over 21, all that stuff. How do you turn that, a quite chance-based system, into a satisfying RPG battle mechanic?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Back in the day, like, we were toying with lots of different prototypes. Then somebody just clicked with Battlejack, and I got inspired with it. Started all from there.
So is it safe to say that you guys were fans of card games before that, or did you come from an RPG background and then, like, just looked at the card game scenarios and thought what would work best?
Actually, I think, like, neither of those.
If the question was, like, what do we personally like to play, I, at least, am a RPG fan since my younger years, but I didn't play a lot of card games.
When you're playing blackjack with a group of people, there is a sort of tactical element if you can see the other players' cards around you. So it gives you the opportunity to try and at least work out what might be in the deck and add that to your considerations. In the game itself, obviously, you're just you. You're just one character, and the game's cards are randomly appearing on the screen, and then you're working it out from there. How do you make it feel like the deck isn't stacked against you, or the game isn't just throwing random cards at you to trip you up or make it unfairly tough or unnecessarily easy for the player?
Well, I think that comes, like, mainly from the meta and the game we built around the heroes themselves. I mean, the system itself is quite random in a way, but more you get into it and the better your heroes get, kind of the chances and the randomness like diminishes, and then it becomes more of a game of like strategy rather than just luck.
Right, because the strategy involved is not only do you have the cards appearing, but the cards are also tied to elements. So you have this elemental attack system as well, the rock, paper, scissors of, like, you know, fire beats water and all the way around. It's quite detail intensive for a light RPG as well. There's like 4 stats per character, there's secondary stats and the elementals attached to it and everything. Blackjack's quite a simple game and is at its essence. Is there a clash there? And are you simplifying the RPG system with Blackjack, or are you complicating Blackjack with an RPG system?
I think that's like a little bit of both. Like, the Blackjack system in itself is quite simple, so we felt like there needs to be something on top of that to make it interesting, and so that there's enough of strategy to the players.
Are there any places that you pulled inspiration from? The initial creatures that you encounter, for example, are small sort of blob-like things, and I couldn't help but think of the slimes and Dragon Quest. Are there little nods to other RPGs that have inspired you there?
Actually, Ari could also talk about the inspiration, because the character design process usually goes so that Ari comes with the background story, and then when that kind of character is done, I start to work on it more. So what do you think, Ari?
Yeah, I mean, I think main inspiration for the characters itself, they came from a lot of other RPGs and mythologies, like Greek mythology and Nordic gods and so forth, Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, Warhammer.
Okay. The main campaign, which is actually a thing that exists within the game, rather than it being a bunch of roguelike style levels that are randomly generated and you just sit down and play a game of blackjack, essentially, there's an actual campaign with sort of mission-based things and a sort of a plot line going on in the background. Was there ever a thought just to make it a more traditional, like, well, you can just sit down and just play a few rounds of fantasy blackjack? Or was the idea always, no, we're going to have a quest line and there's going to be, you know, this rising sense of tension and it's going to get harder and harder? And was that always in it at the beginning?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was. We were playing lots of like competitor games that didn't have that kind of storyline, and they were just like bunch of random levels and so forth. And it felt like would be more fun if there would be actual storyline and like a world with their own history and that kind of things.
So when you're dealing with a free-to-play system, which offers things like summons and coins, which can allow you to combine and evolve your cards, how do you make it so that the system feels fair and doesn't exclude players who don't want to pay any money?
I think it should start really casual and make them able to understand the system gradually. And when you see what you can get, and what you can earn by putting more times in it, then they can measure the price of their time with actual money. And if they feels like if they want to have an improved team by paying on it, then they can decide to pay. And basic progression in the game is like start pretty easy at the beginning, but letting them have a chance to understand how the mechanic works slowly. And when they get some of those mechanics, and when they thinking about some kind of combination they could make, then they can think about progression they can make if they put enough time on it.
Okay. I'll ask this question to everybody, so I'll get an answer from each of you, if that's okay. Given that there are so many of these battle RPG style games on app stores, and it's only become more and more saturated as the years have gone by, it's quite difficult to stand out and to have people drawn to your game over somebody else's. From each of you, what do you think is the one element that makes this different? If you were going to say, this is why you should play Battlejack, this is how it differs from other games, or this is going to be the one that you get hooked into, what would you say? How would you pitch it to somebody and just like, this is why you need to play? Starting with Ari.
Well, first of all, I would start with the blackjack mechanic. I mean, there isn't any other at least as far as I know, that uses the blackjack mechanic. It has a rich world, and I think that those two things.
Okay, Antti.
I would have said, of course, like the core mechanic is, to me, it also is really, really fun, and I personally enjoy it a lot, and so the blackjack is working for me. And I think the characters themselves, we have a cast of cool characters, and they have a personality, and there's like a lot of work and effort gone into crafting those characters and their stories, and hopefully it shows the players also.
And Moon, finally.
Yeah, I would call this kind of game as a third generation of collective RPG. There is like lots of similar games and lots of similar feature. But when we are designing every single feature, we investigate all the previous one closely and try to make it less stressful and more fun.
More fun is a good answer, I think. That's what people want to hear. Excellent. Well, thank you for talking to me today. You can get Battlejack out on app stores at the moment. And Ari, Antti, and Moon, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Out and about this week and last week, technically, you noticed it was a shorter news section because we've got plenty to get through here. So, let's start with Modern Combat Versus, which came out last week while we were away. It is the latest in the Gameloft series of not Call of Duty shooters, and it takes it, for the first time, in a quite different direction. Generally, they've gone with the whole, you know, starting out with World War II and that sort of era, then it went on to the more modern combat. This is more Infinite Warfare, this is more sci-fi, but importantly, there's no single-player campaign in this. This is an exclusively multiplayer shooter. You can play it on your own with bots, I think, but it, from what I played of it, and I played about an hour with a lot of matches, it's just 4v4, and you have to capture an area. So there is a bit in the middle of the map, you'll have to stand in it, capture it, whoever's there the longest does a win. And that's pretty much how it works. It is all right, but it's a bit thin. Without the single player campaign, obviously that's a big omission. And if you're not into the multiplayer aspect and you just play this through for the Michael Bay style, you know, gunishment, then obviously that kind of makes this a complete non-event for you. If you do like the multiplayer stuff, then you'll find that it's like heavily stripped back and stripped down. So they've really gone in on the whole auto shoot when you move your reticle over, which was already on the previous iterations, but people seem to be only noticing it now. And the maps are, you know, not huge, but they're nicely detailed. It looks good. It looks nice. What it lacks is that kind of charm and fun that you get from something like Guns of Boom, which for our money is the most entertaining multiplayer shooter, free-to-play multiplayer shooter on mobile. It itself is still, you know, flawed and a bit sort of iffy in places, but it has that Team Fortress fun vibe. It's really quick, it's really pacey, there's loads of people on the map, and there's a lot of verticality to it, and we just really enjoyed it. This, it feels a bit more sterile, a little bit less exciting, and, well, as we said in the review, I think John Monday reviewed it, and he was like, it's a weird thing, but it's feel. Like, it doesn't feel as fun as other ones. It just feels a bit thinner and a bit lighter, and it really hammers in the free-to-play stuff as well. So new characters are very expensive, and you have to wait for loot drops and all that kind of stuff. So it just doesn't have that same generosity of spirit as its competitors. So we gave it a 7. It's, you know, it's fine, it's all right, but we don't think it's necessarily going to be your favorite shooter on mobile. So Modern Combat, no, yes, yeah, Modern Combat Versus is the name. It's so easy to say the actual thing that it's inspired by with Gameloft. I'm like, did I say Call of Duty? No, Modern Combat. That's
it's
definitely
not this one. Which one is the real one?
Yeah, I know. It's challenging. So that's out at the moment for free. We better check it back with you, Em, because last time we spoke, you were on tenterhooks about the arrival of Stardew Valley on the Switch.
Ah, yes. The promised day has arrived.
It has. And how is your life doing?
Well, my real life is lacking because now I have no free time. My farm life is thriving.
Right. So I'm thinking you already played this when it was on PC, did you?
Yeah, God, I played it to death on PC.
Right. Okay. So you're well familiar with it. So how does the Switch port stack up? What are the major changes?
One of the major changes, you know, is how the fishing takes effect. And I know this sounds super weird if you haven't played Stardew Valley. You know, there's a big balance between planting your crops, harvesting your crops, raising cattle and livestock and stuff, and also fishing, because it helps you get a little bit of extra money. The fishing system is just a click kind of thing where, you know, you click once to put your fishing tackle in the water, and then once it, you know, buzzes and a little arrow goes above the tackle, then you pull it back and you've got to try and balance the fish in the green border.
Oh, I see, yeah. So how do you... Is it by a constantly tapping thing where you have to keep it in the middle?
Yeah.
An arrow between the bar? Yeah.
It's an arrow between the bar, which you've got to keep on pressing Y to sort of keep on raising it. And different fish have different difficulties and different patterns and things. But on the PC, the mouse... Trying to do this with a mouse and keyboard was a lot harder to find a balance for.
Okay.
Because there's so much more range and stuff. And, of course, it's kind of... I don't know, you've got a better feel for it on console-like things, like this, essentially a controller. So I think they've done that really, really well. And just the convenience, the portability of it, if that's a word, I have no idea.
Yeah, both of those things are words.
Cracking, lovely. Because one of Stardew Valley's hardest things is that it auto-saves at the end of the day.
Right.
But, of course, thanks to the Switch's lovely standby feature, you can just go back to your main menu, put your Switch on standby, and then launch it back up whenever you feel like diving in again.
Okay, so with the original one, then you had to wait till the end of the day, and if you turned it off, you would just lose that entire day.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. We were discussing this with relation to Dark Souls about how, like, with the Switch, if you just shut it down or put it to sleep or whatever, it acts as a pause and gives you that option.
Yeah, it's so useful. Like, I mean, I know with Dark Souls, it would be completely irrelevant because that's kind of half the fear. But when it comes to Stardew Valley, like I think I was playing it this morning before I came on to work, and I was like, oh my god, I need to go to work now. And I just sort of had to kind of come away and put it in the standby mode. But I was still like halfway through my day. I think I was in the middle of fishing because I need help, James.
Well, it sounds like you're a satisfied, even oversatisfied customer then.
I think I was always going to be an oversatisfied customer. The one thing that I did read about on Reddit today, which I had no idea was a thing.
Right.
And this did make me laugh, but if it turns out to be applicable to the Switch version as well, I'm in trouble. If you name your character or any of your animals after one of the existing NPCs, it can create confusion within the save files and eventually corrupt your game. Yeah.
Oh, so it doesn't recognize. Usually, games would be like, "No, you can't use this name. This is a
It doesn't have that taken at all. No, it doesn't have it. But the funniest thing is, in a lot of the Reddit posts that I was reading about today, some people have, called their horse Abigail or Sam or something like that, which are NPCs in the game.
Right.
And if they end up marrying these characters, the actual NPCs, sometimes if you go into town with your husband or wife or something, the horse will come instead.
I like to think that's deliberate.
I wish it was.
I hope it is.
I had a proper good belly laugh when I read about that earlier.
Lovely.
But the corrupt file, not so much. But I don't think it's a problem with the Switch. Otherwise, we would have seen more of it.
Okay. All right, then. And safe to say that you give that the thumbs up, then, Stardew Valley on the Switch.
Indeed, indeed. I say, if you just need to take some time out from the world and you're just not having a good time, Stardew Valley is a nice little thing just to sink your teeth into.
Oh, lovely. All right, then. Well, moving on to this week, Stranger Things got a mobile game. This wasn't really hyped. We didn't hear anything about this. Everyone was surprised. And we're sort of glad it's here, as you say in your review, because it's quite good.
It's really good.
It's one of these things that I've been playing this. I played it yesterday. I played it yesterday evening. I've played it today as well for capturing more video for it. And I'm about sort of 3.5 hours in now. It's Like, it's a top-down 16-bit arcade adventure style game with a bit of Metroidvania thrown in, where you take control of initially Chief Hopper, and then you have to wander around the town locating the other characters from the Netflix TV show, which I presume you've all watched because, you know, you're listening to this podcast. It's, there's a definite crossover of the Venn diagram of interests there with Stranger Things, I think. And it makes sense. It's a tie-in to a, not movie, but TV property, which understands, like the Scott Pilgrim game, which I also thought did, and it wasn't a really good movie license tie-in, where, hey, this is a show that's about the 80s and very much embedded in that nostalgia culture, so right, we're going to make a top-down 16-bit style nostalgic adventure game which plays on all of those tropes and reminds you of the games and the era that the show is dealing with. And it could quite easily be trash, but A, it's free-to-play, but actually free-to-play.
Yeah, legit, 100% free. I still can't get my head around that at all.
So I'm just assuming the show did so well they can just afford to do this as a free advertising thing, but and which would make you think, okay, so it's going to be some auto runner that lasts for like, you know, 15 minutes and then you throw away. But no, it's this, I think, 6 chapters at the moment and then more chapters to come, or at least one extra maybe.
Mm. Yeah, and no, it's got body to it. It's actually got substance.
Yeah, so then the chapters take a while to complete. You end up going around and the three kind of three spokes on the wheel that keep it going is exploration, combat, and puzzle solving. So you're wandering around the map and it's like, hey, you've got to go and find, you know, one of the kids, like, you know, go and find Nancy, she's over here and she's, you know, stuck in the Upside Down. Like, all right, cool. So you head across the map and fight off some owls. Fucking owls do my head.
I know, I died so many
owls.
Times.
Yeah, and then you have to go into, like, say, the forest to find her, and the forest is a dungeon in and of itself, and when you hit the map screen, you zoom out, it's huge! Massive! Like, proper, you know, old-fashioned, looking at Zelda, look at the massive map, and wander around, and then you have to beat up the people who are there, often there's lots of guards and sort of the police, mainly, wandering around, getting in your way. And then you have to do puzzles, which involve things like throwing rocks at beehives in order to get bears to run through bits of wood and clear a path, or you have to move these little tables around, these trays, to push foot sensitive buttons on the floor so you can open doors in the school, and that, you know, counters, balances out against the running around and punching people in the face, and then also the silly little story element stuff. And it's relying on the fact that you've seen the show and you know what you're doing. You're essentially playing through, like, the last, I guess, quarter of the TV series, would you say?
I'd say about that.
It's all ramping up and they've already found the Upside Down and all that business. Spoilers, by the way, if you've not seen Stranger Things. I'm surprisingly charmed by it all, and it feels good. It's really easy to control. It's got a little bit of challenge in it. I got stuck on a couple of the puzzles. The last bear one was quite challenging, and when I worked it out, I was like, yes, I am clever.
Satisfaction.
Yeah. You had a criticism, which I think is right, which is after you've played a few chapters, you sort of see the pattern of it.
Mm. Yeah, because I think I was so torn when I was doing this, where I like to give things like a lot of credit and thing, and I kind of stepped back and looked at it. I was like, okay, well, this is a free game. That's really, really good. But the layout of the whole thing, it then gets repetitive.
Yeah.
If you tear away all of the environmental factors and like the design and stuff, if you put it down as bare bones, it would be very similar to each other.
Yes, you can see that there is a pattern and that, you know, they're doing a thing and they're using the template for each level. But it's quite a good template that I find engaging, enough to take me through, like, you know, over 3 hours of gameplay so far on something that I would have assumed would be this piece of throwaway trash. And, like, the likenesses of the characters are really good.
Yeah, I do. I do have a very... Like, when I saw all the characters sort of dotting along the screen, I was like, oh, feelings.
Because, yeah, you've got all the kids turning up, and you're like, all right, okay, I see you. And, like, Hopper's obviously very recognisable. But, like, Nancy. Nancy looks... Like, because the lassie who plays Nancy in the TV series, she has this very kind of pained, like, sort of slightly, I don't want to say emaciated, but she looks like quite, like, undernourished, I guess. And I don't mean that as, like, the physical size. She just looks, like, drained all the time in the series, you know, like she's exhausted. And her eyes kind of, like, you know, go down at the side slightly in that way. And the character looks, the little 16-bit pixel art character. It looks just like her. It's a really good job they've done. Mm. So I would recommend going and looking at this if you have any interest. It's proper free. It's not going to cost you anything at all. And it's really fun. but with our recommendation, maybe play it like a chapter at a time. And then leave
the gap. I think that's the thing. If I played this in little tiny bits, then I would absolutely love it. I just played it, I think, about 2 or 3 hours in one go, and then I kind of got a little bit bored just because that's the person I am.
Yeah, yeah. You had your fill. But even then, for nothing, that's not too bad. So,
oh, my God, yeah. Like, for a free game, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. So check it out. You've probably heard of it already. But Stranger Things, the game, is called on your mobiles right now. I'm going to touch on FIFA 18, that's what I meant to say, on the Nintendo Switch. I haven't played it. I don't have a Switch. I don't suppose you've played it, Em.
Not in this lifetime, no.
No, not a football game. But obviously Glenn, who's not here but will be back next week, has played it. He's done a big old review. Bronze Award. It's all right. It's good. But it's lacking a lot of stuff. That seems to be the complaint so far. So you don't get the story mode. You don't get the journey mode. Which Glenn was like, that's okay. But the worst thing is you can't play online. There's no online functionality. And that's not good for FIFA.
No. I think, well, if it's the same thing that I think it is, the online thing is you can't matchmake. So you have to, if you want to play online with someone, you can't do it. But you've got to just join lobbies with strangers and things like that, and then just kind of go to next random strangers and then so on and so on. You can't physically matchmake with your friends, which is completely bloody pointless.
Yeah, but as we said before, Nintendo Online, so it's basically a stripped down version of the game. So it's fine if you just want to play a few matches, and it's good if you want local multiplayer, which is, after all, what the Switch is all about. But yeah, not the best version of FIFA 18 by some distance. So you can get that out right now. Another tie-in that turned out to be surprisingly good, Geostorm. That ridiculous movie that you've all seen the trailers for, which just looks terrible, like the Another Day After Tomorrow style. Yeah. Oh, the weather's going to get us, and Gerard Butler is going to come and save us from the weather. And it's like, oh. So movie tie-in comes out for this, and you're like, yeah, right, this is going to suck. And they've basically done a Lara Croft Hitman Deus Ex Go style puzzle game, which is, again, quite good.
What is it with all the companies this week?
I know. What is it with you guys making halfway decent licensed tie-ins? It's bizarre. So I can criticise it right off the bat for saying, yeah, it's obviously ripping off that style. So it's the same three-quarter view top-down. You swipe forward to jump, you know, your character around a grid, essentially, and then solve puzzles and whatnot. So that's what it is. It starts out with you being taking control of a lassie who's trapped inside a building. The building has basically been completely flooded, and it's pouring rain, and all the electrics are screwed, and there's big puddles of water everywhere which have been electrified, and you're trying to get her out of this building. And it's got a little bit more freedom than the likes of your Lara Croft Goes, which often funnel you down corridors. So it's only very rarely in Lara Croft where you can kind of move around a grid that's like, say, 3x3 or something like that. Usually it's like one track you can go down, and then it splits off and you can go down different tracks. But you've got a lot more movement here, which means there's a lot more potential options for how you could solve things.
Mm-hmm.
But it does also mean there's sort of dead space. So it could be good, could be bad. But the presentation of it's nice, it looks decent. The puzzles are actually quite fun. So far it's been a lot of stuff about pushing office tables into the water so they act as floating boards you can jump across and use as rudimentary, like, rafts. And then lots of things with, obviously, electrified water, so you have to go and find the fuse box and switch it on, which is behind glass. So you've got to go and find a fire axe to smash the glass in. And then you get these little events which happen where suddenly all the glass on one side of the building will just explode and it comes pouring in a tidal wave. And, again, it's not bad. I was like, wow, it's derivative as hell. It is just going, hey, we'll do the Square Enix-type Go thing. I'm wondering if it won't be long before that is just a dedicated genre.
Mm. Yeah.
You know how it only takes a certain amount of people copying the idea or cloning the idea before it becomes, you know, but back in the day, like the whole Doom clone thing, where now that's just called first person shooter.
Yeah, yeah.
There's only a few things that like stick with it, which is like roguelike. Roguelike is still talking about the game Rogue. And the genre literally means like Rogue. So it's the equivalent of a first person shooter being called a Doom-like.
Yeah. See, what that must be such an achievement.
Yeah, I guess, because you're synonymous. But I don't think people know. Like, a lot of people nowadays don't know. They just know it's called a roguelike. But, you know, that's because it's like Rogue.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when I started this job, I didn't know.
Well, unless you're familiar with the genre. So I'm wondering if this might happen to the Go series. But then Go itself was based on a real board game. So it's already rooted in something, you know, a different idea. So there you go. But, again, we're telling you to go and play a movie tie-in or a tie-in for a movie that will almost certainly be rubbish, but it's all right. It's quite good. You can play the first bit for free at least, and then you can pay later, I think, if you want to. But we quite liked it. 7 out of 10. Not bad. A few other quick ones before we vanish. So let's take... Ooh. He pauses and looks wrecked. R-E-K-T in the internet meme parlance. It's a driving game where you have to go around doing stunts. If you were to look at it, it looks like a low poly version of Rocket League without the football, and the objective, instead of scoring goals, is to drive up ramps and then do mad flips and that, which you do by jumping off the ramp and then spinning, like swiping the screen to spin left or spin forward or whatever, and then put both fingers on the screen to kind of stop yourself midair and then land it. So it's kind of like a car version of a Tony Hawk's, but with more simple swipey controls. And it's actually quite fun. Again, like I found it sort of, it's easy to get into. You do like mad combo chains and all that. I've only played it for about 15, 20 minutes, but like it was, again, quite enjoyable. I don't think we've done the review for it yet, but it's a premium game, $1.99 or $1.99 on iOS only at the minute. The game that Glenn been harping on to you about this as well, Dragon Project.
Yeah, I know it's been going around. It's like Monster Hunter, like, should we pull that in there?
Yes, exactly. Another one. Yeah, so Glenn's been saying, hey, Dragon Project's quite good. You know, it's a bit like Monster Hunter, but it's not. And I looked at it and I was just like, oh, this looks awful. But I don't know, I haven't played it yet. It is a grindy, free-to-play thing, but it is essentially you are going around with your little squad and you are hacking up big monsters and capturing them for bits. And then, you know, doing it again and again and again, like you do in Monster Hunter. But this is just the kind of thing Glenn likes, which is the sort of a mechanic that he enjoys, and then repeat, repeat, repeat. He really gets into that grind business.
Yeah.
So that's available. It's free to play. It is a 7 out of 10 again. Harry, sort of more casual Monster Hunter, basically summed it up, and it's just about pulls it off, apparently. So, you know, you should go and check it out as well. Dragon Project. Okay, I think that's it. I feel like that was a lot of stuff.
This has been too positive, this podcast.
I know.
Where's our usual cynicism?
Well, it's nice to have a little moment where you go, all these things we thought would suck actually don't suck quite so hard.
All the things that were supposed to suck this week turned out to be quite good.
That's basically the best kind of praise that I personally could hope for. Well, we met him. He doesn't suck quite as bad as we thought. Right. So yes, come and join us next week where we'll be discussing more games from the upcoming week with Glenn as well, hopefully. And like, subscribe, and rate and review, and give us sweets.
That'd be nice.
Thank you for listening, guys. We'll speak to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. And stop.